I'm Laura Vinroot Poole, and this is What We Wore.
Ellen Carey has been a part of the fashion industry for over 30 years. She's created a career out of supporting emerging designers and encourages everyone to find their own unique path within the industry. Remind me, I know you're Canadian. Tell me where you're from.
I'm from a small town outside of the border of upstate New York. My father and mother met in church, believe it or not. And
I believe it.
He was a altar boy and she got communion. I guess it was love after that. And she was younger and from the Canadian side and probably not the posh family his mother wanted her handsome son to marry. She was very petite. And so we have dual citizenship because of my mother's Canadian side. My father was the handsome young son of the big family and was to marry, you know, some, let's say, Grace Kelly's woman and not my mother, a little French Canadian. So he inherited the family farms when his father passed, and they had to run dairy farms and make cheese and ice cream. And it was a huge operation that my mother became the controller of the accounts and the finances and the public image. And she always dressed very elegantly, Laura, even though she was on a farm, you know, and as did my father when he went into public. So I think early on, she made me realize that an outfit that you wear into the public's eye can create an aura. And she was, again, very tiny. So she altered everything and learned how to sew. She loved a good jumpsuit because of her. I remember this jumpsuit she would make with her headbands. And she was very outgoing and attractive and often went places alone because my father was more a reserved man that didn't really like to go to the theater or social events like she did. So she dragged me along. And that's how I started dressing up, and whatever little dress or glove or pocketbook she'd add, the more the better for me. My sister didn't get that gene. She was the tomboy and older. And often my mom wanted to dress us alike. And this did not go well with my sister. So if you see me crying in early baby pictures, it's because she beat me up because I wanted those gloves.
You also had a very fashionable aunt.
I did, Aunt Cora. She was from, she ended her life in Florida, but she lived in New York. And she, it was way back in the 40s, and she would eat a biscuit. She would tell us, because she just to stay thin before she went somewhere, because she didn't want to seem like she was overeating. You know, it was very polite to be very narrow. And they had their hats and their fur coats and their finery, every picture that I got to go through in the picture books. But when they'd come up to visit us at Christmas or a big holiday in the summer, they would bring gifts. My favorite one she gifted me was a jewelry box where you open up and the music plays and the little ballerina dances. And that's a gift that, you know, every time she came, it was going to be something I didn't know, I didn't have. I'd sit at her feet, I'd open the gift. And yes, I do say I'd take after her a little bit. I'm definitely nervous and I'm definitely like my accessories like she did.
Ellen, did you go visit Aunt Cora when she lived in Manhattan?
You know, she was on Jane Street, believe it or not, in the West Village.
Wow.
I didn't, you know, I was very young. But my mom would with her sisters. My mom had two sisters, Joan and Judy. That is my love of the West Village. Definitely. You know, Jane Street back then was as beautiful as it is today.
Growing up, you were in upstate New York or Canada, upstate New York?
It was both. And I went to school in Plattsburgh, McGill University. I took a semester in Syracuse at a clothing store to work in fashion. And it wasn't what I was schooling. I was schooling in economics and journalism. My college roommate was from Scarsdale, and she was a veterinarian. And we became very good friends. And that's how I came to New York. I came with her. I remember one holiday and we stayed in New York for, you know, 3 weeks. And I just got the bug of being in a big city versus the country. But We did have the farm. I had very serious commitments. A lot of it was the packaging of things, you know, stamping the expiration. I was part of the line that had to do all of this. And, you know, it was like making lipstick in a factory. You had your little day, you know, job. Mine was at the end.
What was your impression of that? I mean, was that something that you, like, did you have any indication of what you wanted to do when you grew up? And was that part of it? Or
Laura, back then you really didn't, you know, we had the magazines. I remember idolizing those. You know, it was the films. My mom loved the movies. I mean, the glamorous movies we'd watch. And there was that one where Judy Carr gets hit. And, you know, she's supposed to meet at the Empire State Building. I forget the name of the movie. That was one of my mom's favorite movies. We'd watch it. So there was always that fantasy. Remember, it was Gene Kelly and Elizabeth Taylor. My mom maybe looked more like Elizabeth Taylor. I was very odd in my coloring. I had red hair and blue eyes. My family's all black hair and black eyes. So no one quite understood where I came from. And I didn't tan. They were out in those hay fields, tanned. My sister was lounging in bikinis, tan. Oh, I was the lobster, you know, hiding under an umbrella. So it never didn't quite work, but we had an aunt who lived in New York, and that's how I came to be here. I got picked from college and I moved in a boarding house on Gramercy Park. And that's where I started. And that's how I met a lady walking her dog in Gramercy Park and left my financial career, which I had gotten to New York for from college. And I ended up moving secretly to the magazine to work for her. And that was the start of my change of career and a path into fashion.
Wait, okay, so you left McGill at what, 21?
1980s were the college years to 84. Then I came here to work on Wall Street, actually,
gotcha.
Really, truly Wall Street, down here where I live now.
Of all people, my God, I love that. Okay.
And I had Evan Bacone shirt dresses. That was my outfit, Evan Bacone, double-breasted and little fishnets. And I worked for an economist who a specialty wow. was economic stocks. And he was quite eccentric, a true cowboy with a big hat. And I was his, you know, first PA. And it was fun. I lasted a little while down there, but it was male dominated. I was exactly not what they wanted, but maybe brainy, but not necessarily did I fit in. And that was probably the first time I realized, wow, you also have to look at your surroundings. You know, are you like the others? Do you have common things outside of the office? You know, am I smoking those cigars, Laura? I'm not.
Right. And so did you feel like I've got to get out of here or it just happened?
I didn't want to fully leave because I was educated in that. And my parents, you know, paid for my college. I had respect of their gift of the education. And I knew that finance was going to help me do whatever I went forward with. But I didn't know that there was such a career as selling advertising at a magazine or, you know, we did the kids issues, which were the holiday issues with Bonpoint, and I had to cast children. And, you know, I didn't know that was a job. You know, remember, you know, I knew that we could labor in sewing clothes, but not necessarily, oh, this is a job. I can look at kids and say, okay, you're in or you're not. So that was my job. And then I realized that this magazine didn't have an office in Paris.
You met a woman in Gramercy Park.
And I became her assistant. Yeah.
And where was she? She was?
Was at Town and Country magazine.
Wow. And did you know Town and Country? I mean, was it something that you had read or been interested in?
In the women's boarding school, which was on Gramercy Park at the boarding, it had a sitting room, very old school, and there was magazines in there. And of course, Town and Country was. It was right near the Gramercy Arts Club, which I became a member early on. So, you know, it was all kind of posh around there, though I wouldn't have known that. I mean, where the boarding house was is now some luxury condominium and Jimmy Fallon's on the top floor.
And so what was it like working at a magazine versus Wall Street? Was it a totally different set of rules?
You know, we were on the border because they children's issue was quite respected for the advertising. So we were bordering the advertising department and the fashion department. So we're still a little bit concerned about money, which was something I learned through my career was still important.
Yeah.
Our shoots were magnificent. You'd get everybody wanting to advertise. And if they weren't, that's when a reshoot would happen. But, you know, the children's issue, it, believe it or not, was one of the most profitable.
And did you automatically connect to that, to the styling and, I guess, producing?
No, I was more interested in the business side of the magazines. And that's how I ended up convincing them that we should have an office in Paris and I should open it. And that was way back when there was no internet or nothing.
How did you even think that that could should be a possibility?
You know, you kind of became friendly with the people. You became friendly in there. I did have one good friend, and she took me to Lohmann's. That was a really good friend back then. Yeah. And, you know, my first outfits were Jean Galliano bought at Lohmann's.
I love it.
I'll never forget that outfit because she knew when goods were dropped and we went way up in Harlem. We'd take a subway. We'd go together early Sunday mornings. That woman was magnificent. Now, I'm not sure where she was, but she bought Donna Karan. And that's where we got it in the back room.
Wasn't that fun?
It was incredible.
Oh my God, loved it.
So incredible. And you know, once you knew when and where they were getting it and you knew your designer was coming, it was like I was hardcore then.
Me too. I mean, I went to school outside of Boston, and so Filene's was such a it was so much fun. The things that you would find, it was just like a dream.
It was a gold mine. And really, you know, one of the designers I loved and ended up going to work for, his clothes were there, very hard to understand. Romeo Gili's his name. And I knew how to do it all. And those ladies in that back room were like, show me how you did that. You know,
because back in the day, I mean, you had to wear something special to do that, right? You had to wear like basically a leotard underneath because you had to strip down in the store.
Well, and you learn, you know, I'm sorry, you know, what did I have on back then? I can't remember, only hearts maybe or something, but like, come on, the Kim Kardashian doing a unitard now is just like, those are essential to have at a come to guess on sale or wherever you're going. And I just, I laugh about it because, you know, these women were so modest, you know, of a that would go in those back rooms. They had Jeffrey Bean, Laura, my favorite outfit of Jeffrey Bean I got back there. I can't even believe it was back there.
But Ellen, so this sounds like the Ellen I know, because I think you and I both just love beautiful things. Did that turn on for you then?
You know, my mom was always dressed and I always dressed dolls. I don't think I ever connected all of it until I got to Paris. I ended up helping Azzedine Alaia walk his dogs. He was a small man.
How did that happen?
I really don't remember, Laura. I was trying to, because I just remember he didn't speak English very well.
No, he didn't.
And I just heard of him and I knocked on that intimidating door and we became friends. And, you know, this is a long time ago when no one even knew who he was. And I was there when this man came knocking with a ponytail and thought he was coolest guy ever. And he was going to open a store in New York and he wanted these clothes. And that man's name is Gene Pressman. And the store at that time was a men's discount store with a small alcove on the top floor of designer brands. But this young man had a vision to say, I'm going to conquer fashion. In such a compelling new way for Mr. Alaia that he said yes.
And did you believe him? I mean, could you see it?
You know, he was from Syracuse and I had done that in his semester in Syracuse. That was the bond. I don't know. There was something innocently rock star about him with his tight jeans. And remember, I'm from Canada. We only wore tight jeans. You know, it was like, this guy's my people. And he said, well, you can have a job at this new store. And I ended up taking a job at Barney's, which in those days, we did everything. This is one of the miniature shopping bags that we created. It was a black shopping bag. And it is truly the logo.
Love.
No apostrophe. I corrected that 152,000 times, including under all the recent articles at Printemps where they spell the name wrong. But I was programmed by my lovely boss to do many things, Laura, at this job. She had come from Bergdorf's. She was the etiquette book of all kinds of people. You follow etiquette. And she taught me so much.
And who was that, Ellen?
I'll call her a dear friend, is Mallory Andrews. And she had come to Barney's with two of her friends, Connie Darrow and Richard Lambertson. And they were the three people that kind of got hired to start this new store. Neil Kraft came in with advertising, and Mallory hired people, me, Simon Doonan, and Stephen Johankonek had been there. He was in store design. And James Mail, another dear friend of mine, came in for events and plants and flowers. And she really kind of put an interesting team together. We were all hard workers and all very young in our careers, but devoted to make Barney's special.
And what was your role?
I was the head of, initially under, we didn't really have staff. I was the head of PR, but, you know, I eventually became the head of PR, but I was the head of everything.
Did you understand what that meant and what it needed to be for Barney's for this new thing?
As we were downtown and we were considered alternative to Bergdorf's, there was no rules, Laura. We could make the rules. And back then you had no, you know, filler people. You were the person. And, you know, we created press days. Well, what were press days, Laura? We called in from the designers in Europe when the buyers were there. They would pick three outfits that we bought at Barney's, and we had them in a conference room that we created where Carrie Donovan would come with her staff. And then I would do a presentation to Carrie of these are the designers that Barney's was supporting for the season, and these are the outfits you have to pull from to use in your magazines. And the same was with the home department in Barney's. We had a full store of housewares, of apothecary goods, of menswear. I learned every inch of that magnificent store. And I could tell you that Route de Tay was the fragrance exclusive to Barney's that, you know, Clarice Cliff was one of the most beautiful vintage potters in the world that we had in our vintage area. I mean, it was amazing. I can't even tell you what I learned. We had a tender buttons department and lilac chocolates. I mean, iconic things today.
Will you talk about working at Barney's in its heyday and kind of, I guess, how you were all in on it, like how everybody understood, like, this is the job.
Well, and remember, it was just one store. Then it started to grow. I was there at the beginning. I even found some of the original invitations, wow, which no one can even believe I still have, but I can because I collect everything. This was the famous Levi's denim, which we sent in tubes, exquisitely designed tubes of Levi's jackets, asked specific designers and artists to customize them. And then we did a launch party where we auctioned off the jackets down the spiral staircase that was created by Andre Putman in that gorgeous store. And my favorite model was Madonna. She wore her friend's Jean-Michel Basquiat's jacket, and it went on and on. We had Iman. Look at that. Iman was wearing Alaya. Oh my God. No, actually that was Keith Haring. Keith Haring. Can you imagine? And all these people were up on that top floor with me. I was responsible with my girlfriend and another young man to get them all dressed and get them down that spiral staircase. Oh my God. It wasn't a big team, Laura. That's what was so amazing. And what we accomplished with a small team was
extraordinary.
Legendary.
Yeah.
There was a magazine I found too, which I'm going to give to Jean and Bob. There is a book that is done, Laura. It'll be out in September that Jean has had a writer do about Barney's. And I know there's galleys that people have seen, so it is finished. It is coming out, and I think it will be exciting for people to really know some of the things that I lived.
Yeah.
Because those times are gone. When I say the name of these places, they're gone.
It was just the most exciting place to shop ever in the world.
It wasn't a competition between these retailers. It was a different viewpoint that was a welcoming of artists and alternative people. I say that because Uptown is very different. Yeah. If you're not an Uptown person, you know, you didn't feel that comfortable shopping. We got the Andy Warhols. We got, you know, the artists blowing glass like Dale Chihuly coming through Barney's. And they were in, again, I say, you know, Ruben Toledo and Isabel. I mean, they were people that lived around the corner, and we became their restaurant because we had a beautiful restaurant. Roger Thompson was a hair salon. You know, everyone was getting their hair done downstairs. You know, it was full serviced in a way that nothing was like that downtown.
So why did you decide to leave?
That was my mistake. I will be honest. I got approached by Bergdorf Goodman, believe it or not, to become a fashion director under Don Mello. And I thought that was a good move. It was more money. I should have known I was not really like the others there. I mostly wore hot pants at that time and go-go boots. And those hot pants were Chanel and Moschino bought by Bergdorf's. But Mr. Niemark did not like that attire and called me every morning to his office to see what I was wearing. You know, I just didn't fit in.
Yeah.
I did call Jean and ask to come back, but they wouldn't let me. So I stuck it out until a man I loved and wrote love letters to. We were back in the day where mail was the mode, or a telex, but you couldn't telex. And that was really where I learned what life was about. And I moved to Italy.
And worked for Romeo Gigli.
I did. At the peak of his career.
And talk about him and why he was so special.
Well, there was three people, and I will say they were all special. I had a relationship with all three. Carla Sazzani was his muse. Wow. She had been a magazine editor, and she came in-house to run the Imagine of Romeo Gigli with her own Corso, Carla Sazzani gallery within our compound. Donato Mino was her husband and the mastermind behind the growth of Romeo Gigli. I traveled often with him because I was more in his department, an exquisite human being. He had come from the salsa era of furniture and design. So that is how our stores got developed under Romeo Gigli with his mind. And then there was Romeo, the true artistry of color and femininity and baroquism and romanticism. I mean, Laura, I did fall in love with him. And I truly wrote a love letter when I worked at Barney's. We had his first show. And then at Bergdorf's, we had the magnificent major show. And the letters came back and they eventually offered me a job. And that was when I was really naive. And then I learned all of these people that you will want to know. Mats Gustafsson. I mean, I have all the catalogs from the original days. And they're in mint condition. I just, you know, we launched so many. Look at this. Look at these. This is our swimsuit catalog. I mean, can you see this? They were just
stunning.
The works of art. I mean, everything. And, you know, that is the saddest thing, is that he's never really, you know, I did have a moment of reconnecting with him through a wonderful journalist who went to see his new life. He lives in Marrakesh. He has a hotel. And during COVID, this man connected me to Romeo. I'd not spoken to him in years. And I'm so glad he's still here. He's created something wonderful to travel to if anybody wants to go on vacation in Marrakesh. But, you know, we had a special time and that broke up, and it was a sad breakup and I didn't know what to do.
Why was it so challenging to work for these different people, and why didn't it work out? Not with you, but with him. I mean, why?
Yeah, in truth, it was a love story and a triangle that broke up, and you couldn't keep or sustain those parts separately. You know, it one fuels the other, and the marriage was so of those three parties was an explosion of magnificence. So you try just to have the designer go off, which he tried, and get the factories to support you. Okay. But you lose Carla Sensani, whose sister is Franca Sensani. I mean, they were powerful, and still she is to this day powerful. You can't fight them.
Yeah.
And then you lose a man who controlled all your licensees and your, you know, finances. It's a marriage and it's a team. People forget that you need a team. And that is something you see today with the troubles that are happening in this world and in fashion. You know, you have to support your people and be, what's the word? Grateful to them. I mean, that's it. You learned it big time. You know, that if you go back, and I don't believe the books have ever been written clearly on that breakup, but it's a sad one because historically he, I'd say Helmut Lang, they were all made in the Zamasport factory. You had Zegna making Romeo suits. Zegna is so prestigious today. Imagine them making a colorful, creative men's suit, Laura, at the time they were doing it. I mean, to get them to do that is remarkable because it elevated his stature immediately. And, you know, to this day, Zegna is still considered the top of the top. So he had the top. And we had the most wonderful men coming in the store on Madison. We opened, oh, this was the other debacle. I think we're going to open downtown. Holly Solomon is our number one client in a major gallerist back then, my size. And she took us to the meatpacking, stood out there in her little petal blouse and, you know, cocoon coat of Romeo and said, I'll put my gallery here. We'll have Jerry's restaurant here. Your store will be here. And, you know, it was meat and people chopping up meat back then. And it was like, I remember Donato looking at me like, no, we got to make some money. And then we're going uptown. And I'm like, no, I want to go here, you know. And, you know, the progress of the meatpacking, I mean, Laura, come on. That was insane.
Yeah. Florent.
And Florent. Holly saw it. Holly Solomon saw it. She was a wonderful gallerist of eccentricity, but she lived in Sutton Place. So in all honesty, come on, what does that teach you?
What's the biggest lesson you learned from that experience?
There's so many. If I talk about it, you don't be so naive. You know, I never did a proper company with the Italians. It was under my name. So when it all imploded, that lease was under Ellen Carey in the store.
Oh, wow.
And it was a lot of rent that I had to come up with.
Wow.
But the banks did believe that I had some smarts, and no, I didn't. Remember, it goes back to my bank.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how I secured some funding to open my own company, which is called Seed. It was named by an old friend way back when, and it was to help germinate and transport artisanal products to the forefront. And it was, again, pre-internet, but I think it's a great name. We wanted something pronounceable in many languages, and in it to apply to different classifications, not just fashion, because I had got the Italian bug. My first space that I took was at 76 Green Street in the heart of Soho. I went back downtown after the debacle. I did excuse myself from Romeo Gigli. They tried to give me, you know, a part-time position. I couldn't, you know, it was all or nothing in my head back then. But I took a man who I met through Romeo Gigli as a partner, and he helped me import things from Italy because his father owned a shipping company. So we could import for free.
Who were some of the early people that you carried?
Well, we tried so many things. Sanchita Anjapur. She was a textile designer at Romeo Gigli, and to this day, she does still some things moving into the home decor decoration. She has been behind the scenes of many brands you have carried, namely one that we both love, Albert Albaz. Mm. She did a lot of his production work in India. She's an exquisitely attractive human being. I'd say Jonathan Adler was a find, and he's having a retrospective at the Mad
Oh my God.
In May. I'm like, Jonathan, you're younger than me. He was one of my home discoveries. That was at a home store. He had a humble pot that was handmade, and I still have that.
Wow.
You know, I've tried. One of my big financial solids and seed was to help MAC Cosmetics and bringing my Canadian heritage back. MAC never blew up in the prestigious manner that I believe it should have, because the quality of the product is there. But they were two men, gay men, and they were not appreciated when they came for their meetings here in America. So they ended up at Henri Bendel's. They couldn't get into the Bergdorf's and the Barneys. We were Francois Nars in that day, and MAC ended. But MAC has surpassed all expectations.
Yes.
And, you know, we introduced them to Estee Lauder. I'll never forget that meeting. You know, it was like, you know, who are you? And we were alternative, and alternative, but giant in Canada.
Yeah.
Because they owned a factory and their parents ran the factory, and it was a pristine. And so one of the big things I created for them was Viva Glam, and doing makeup for fashion shows and creating a lipstick that the designer could make and give, and the proceeds from those sales of those lipsticks ended up for AIDS. And that has just had its anniversary. We were invited, me and the original man that created it with me. I think it's 50 years. We were mesmerized that we were invited. It's no longer the little company.
Aww.
But we felt very honored because we really worked hard back then and making it something.
So when you started Seed, what was the opportunity that you saw? Because I don't really remember there being showrooms back then.
Right. Well, that was the thing. I didn't want to go back and work for somebody full time after being, you know, through your heartbroken through these experiences. So I felt that maybe creating a space that was inviting and showing different things would be exciting. I had fortunately through Romeo met a lot of the magnificent specialty stores and befriended a few of them when I was working with Romeo, like buying for them in the flea markets in London, or one was Joan Weinstein. She owned Ultimo, and she
incredible.
Was perhaps one of the most incredible women in, I can say. And she would wire me $50,000, and I would go to London on my weekends, and I would buy at the auctions, particularly 1920s and 30s dresses, and she would sell them in her shop.
And that store was so beautiful, wasn't it?
And the coral, that's my love of coral. When I moved from my loft in Soho and I ended up going to a private house, I had a coral room because of her.
Yes.
But she would travel, and, you know, I go back to Carla Sizzani. I traveled with these people. And it was a different time, Laura, when I see people saying, I don't check anything. I can't carry on. I was like, boy, just like, would I have loved to work for you? I was the one staying at the airports in LA. I'll never forget this. And Carla had about 42 luggages. Each one had a coat. We were having a meeting at Maxfield's or something, you know, and it was like, okay. And I stayed, and they stayed at the Bel Air, and I stayed at the Mondrian, but I knew how to get all that luggage to their hotels, you know? And one of the things you'd carry, I mean, it was insane, was like a spice, you know, those Dean and DeLuca spice racks.
Mm-hmm.
That was in one luggage. Hello. What?
It was a different time. You mentioned Seed House. Will you talk a little bit about, describe your incredible townhouse in Chelsea?
Well, so Soho, like we know, the city does, it changes and it became expensive. I think I had a 10-year lease at the beginning. And I was saying to somebody who recently looked at a space on Green Street, I had walled my long loft I took and sublet my left side to an art director. So I basically, he paid my rent. Thank you. When I was so young, that was Sam Shaheed. And he was a very big agency and did many books. And Bruce Weber was his photographer, and they would have thousands of edits and print pictures, Laura, all Saturday, Sunday, they'd be in there editing. You know, it was all hand done. It was so different.
Yeah.
And that it was a great neighbor. We had the best time, very fun time in Soho. And so my lease was up. I didn't really want to stay doing what I did. And I asked my retailers, particularly ones I loved, like I'll throw out another one, Linda Dresner. Yeah. Who, I'm sorry, she really
legend
made my closet wonderful. She had a modernist store on Upper Madison. One editor I befriended and stayed my very dear friend through the end was Polly Mellon. As you know, she recently passed. That beautiful ode in the New York Times did bring me literally to tears. I think she would have been so happy to see that ode. She traveled alone a lot and was very eccentric and always more enthusiastic than the others. But she taught me something early on, was that you don't be afraid to be alone. You enjoy that you don't have to get all these people to agree with you when you travel. Be excited, because you're experiencing something that we have to do by committee. You can do what you want. If you want to spend an extra 3 days in Florence to go to Loretta Capone back in the heyday, you do it. And I did it, you know, after her giving me that lecture, because I wasn't going to be like the others. I had a very strange job, you know. Yeah. So that's how I started experiencing other parts of Italy, like Lake Como, and meeting some fine Fissori was a cashmere company making the best of the best, very expensive cashmere. We tried to sell that in America. I tried everything.
You brought all of the very best of everything from all over the world.
And that's, remember, one brand that you really embraced and I think launched for us was, I went another direction, was Australia. And not really sure why, but I was asked to see this young artist, and she made lingerie mostly.
Collect.
And Bridget Foley was the one that said, if you combine the colorful stretch slip with the lace and make it a dress, I will put it on the cover of Women's Wear. And that's how Colette Dinigan came to be.
Wasn't it so beautiful, Ellen?
Oh my God, Laura, you probably still have. I gave a lot away, and
I'll never forget that pale seafoam green lace with gold,
and
it had
so
a
gorgeous
pink slip underneath. It was the prettiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
The colors, and she was like, you know, if you knew some of the people that
she's darling
were her friends, like Baz Luhrmann and his wife did the show production. They weren't, no one knew who they were. They were the Aussies. So because of my Romeo pedigree, I encouraged her to show in Paris. And we learned that Romeo showed in Paris rather than in Italy in the smallest tent to make him look more important. Mm. And that was Carla's mastermind. And I kind of shared that knowledge with the people like Colette that I worked with. Georgina von Utzdorf was another magnificent artist. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Yes.
And Lulu Guinness, another one.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
Ellen, you brought all the best. You did.
Remember Lulu? I mean, your flowers are making me think.
It's definitely very Lulu.
Oh my God. But we had a store with her Lucite covers on the floor. Oh my God. We were crazy.
Yeah. What was your biggest personal or professional challenge during this time?
You know, I always had trouble getting people to come, you know, and particularly the department stores. I was just going back to my Bergdorf days. I just wasn't like the others. And Meghan Park flew once. We did Neiman Marcus conclave. I mean, the word conclave is out in everybody's tongue. But, you know, Meghan and I, so Meghan is an Australian, but she started in London. I met her through Lulu Guinness. She then got pregnant. Sorry, Meghan, for confessing your story with twins. And she was later in life, in her late 30s. And so she went on bed rest, but she ends up going home to Australia. And it resurged her career, saying hometown girl comes home. I end up in India for her. Her career started in India doing embroidery work, mostly in bridal. Then she moved into ready to wear, and she meets Dries Van Noten. And the factory to this day, the one she works with two, still make Dries clothes and hers. She's very knowledgeable in embroidery work, though that might fall out of favor now and then. I'm encouraging her to come back with more embroidery because that is something she does better than anyone. I think a lot of my time related to my spaces. My company seed is always the master umbrella, but then I had, you know, the seed, the house, and then seed penthouse and seed garden, you know, seed Hudson for a while. I was up in the Hudson Valley for COVID. But you know, you just don't realize that name kind of could be under everything.
It's a great brand. That was pretty genius.
Yes. We had, remember I had my anniversary of 30, was it 30 years or 20, 25, seed 25. It was my mom's idea to call up your favorite people from the past, ask them to create one item that you can wholesale to make it under seed 25. And that was somebody that, Laura, you also supported. I'm going to bring his name up because we had the most fun traveling with him.
Oh, he's wonderful.
He looked like Lyle Lovett and rode a unicycle. I will tell you, he really did.
But he was incredible, Ellen, because he owned all of Charles James's corset machines, right?
And I mean, we made some very famous dresses like this one. Yes. Ended up on Jennifer Hudson.
My sister's wedding dress is that. In white.
Oh, was it really? Yeah. Oh my God. I remember we made your, but you know, oh, look at these though, Laura. I mean, I still have these corsets. I can't say I could get in them, but you know, but he was discovered by Joan Weinstein. He's self-taught. He makes gingerbread houses like nobody else because he became pattern obsessed. And that's how he went into corsetry. And back in my youth at Barney's, on my bulletin board was a double page spread of the Vanity Fair corset ad of Ultimo. And believe it or not, years later, I meet the man through Joan's suggestion and help him. And we lasted almost 20 years and we really did have a fun time trial. I can't say it was fun. He and I were tiny people. He was eccentric. I was eccentric. And we would go to Dallas and we'd look at this plate of the food. It was like, can we share that? That's just, I was like, but I think we came to your world. It was so beautiful. By George was pretty fun too. Yeah. Katie and Matt really showed us a fun time.
So wonderful.
But Peter did, you know, he handmade everything. It was just a remarkable human being of magnificenceness. And, you know, I don't think people understand a hand labor is going to still be in business despite the factories or the, you know, the hardships. And he'll come out of the woods a big commission.
What are you most excited about in your work now?
You know what? Right now, I'm not excited as I should be, but I do have to say I came back to New York. I left unexpectedly. It's a long story, but for 3 months again, and I came home because I'd made a mistake. And I have to admit that, you know, sometimes you do something and you have to say, okay, was wrong. And unexpectedly, the passing of my mother brought me back to where I need to be.
Yeah.
And I, as you know, I like to do pins. The Joy was a huge success, but the new one is an ode to my mom. It's tiny, but mighty. Aww. It's her colors. Favorite colors were Edna Mode's favorite colors. You'll remember my doll, Edna Mode, who was in the Incredibles movie. Yep. And my mom reminds me of her. She was always telling you things and prophets like black is beautiful. In this moment, I beg to come back to my penthouse in the financial because it's safety and I know I can rest here. And this magnificent deco building that I have admired all my life in New York, across from Trinity Church, is finally finished, Laura. It's been 8 years in the conversion from office to residential, and a department store has come called Printemps. And that opened a month and a half ago. And I will tell you, that has brought me tremendous joy.
I love that.
I go there about 22 times.
So I love it, Ellen.
All the kids know me there. I have gifted them some of my personal clothes because I know that I won't wear them again. And I pulled them back from my dealers and said, you've inspired me. I got a private tour of the store before it opened with a wonderful designer, Peter Stropolopoulos. You might remember he used to do Jonacare. Now he does pottery, couture pottery. We've become friends later now in our different levels of life. And I've never had such a magnificent day as with him for 5 hours in this magnificent building. And, you know, there's a mosaic finale room that hasn't been uncovered to the public. It was built in 1930. It is truly sensational, Laura. And they've honored it, doing a living shoe salon within this. If anybody says anything negative about it, okay, there is missteps, but they can be corrected. The core is phenomenal.
I can't wait.
And I am excited to say that to you because I can't say
You haven't been able to say it for many, many years, I can tell you.
Well, I do love my, there's little specialty stores, but this is something that we need right now.
Yeah.
Especially in New York.
You said something in the pre-recording questionnaire. You said that your motto right now is don't let the old in. What does that mean to you?
You know, it's so funny because I've seen this on Billy Norris Instagram this morning, him showing a young man singing, a current song, a Chapel Roan song, a Pink Pony. Is it called Pink Pony? And he's like 90. You know, I think as we age, and I am old now for this career, but not that old.
You look great. I don't think you are.
Thank you, Laura. You, if you see under the mirror, I see. You do feel ageism a little. And I've had this discussion with people and, you won't get hired because, you're this age or you don't have 100,000 followers on your Instagram. And, at one point, Laura, I'm just, just give me some joy. Okay. I'm still here. I still have knowledge. I can, help anybody. And I had a call with somebody recently and they said that to me. You don't sound like you let the old in. And that was something that Holly Solomon, as she aged, she never seemed old to me.
Yeah.
She was an eccentric woman. Her apartment was beyond crazy, on Sutton Place, no less, but bonkers inside. And her galleries were so forward and progressive, though she was 80.
Yeah.
Let's say that, let's celebrate age. Why is it, why are we not? Now there's more interest today than there used to be, but I'd say it's wrong.
Well, I don't think you've changed one bit. I mean, it's like a
Laura,
time
you've
capsule.
Seen me through the highs and lows. And, I do say, I thank you because, your world is so beautiful, but it's like in New York, sometimes not. That was something coming back this time was different from any before. I miss my things and my things are not like the others. And I'm not going to encourage people to learn my things because they're my things. I have a secret alley. I go and, I have my churches. I love churches and they are many in this city that you can go and rest your nerves and sit there for, 10 minutes and center yourself and get back out. But it doesn't mean there's anybody in them. It's just your special place, secret gardens or, your love of, Morgan Library or someplace that isn't the trend. And I always thought that was a good thing until it wasn't. And I learned I don't care.
If you could share any advice about what it takes to make it in the fashion industry, what would it be?
There's so many ways now to do it direct to consumer and enjoy yourself and slow fashion. We started these joy dresses, Laura, during COVID, and I rented some crazy house up in Hudson Valley and I met a man and we started making scarf dresses with vintage scarves because they were accessible and I had a huge collection. He had a huge collection and they were designers. Did you know, Giorgio Santangelo made scarves. Did you know Jeffrey Mead made scarves? Did you know Kenzo and Adrian Bedadini? But you could find designer silk scarves, and the dresses take 10, and they're each unique. And the first person that bought one was Molly Nutter. She wore it to By George, and she said, "Ellen, you have to make them for our store." And I'm like, "No, these are fun. These are supposed to be fun." But it turned into something bigger as they opened St. Vincent Hotel in New Orleans. But I'm saying, be open. You don't need to follow the rules if you want to be something, you know, unique and special. If you want to be a big conglomerate in the department stores, okay, that's a different journey you have to take. But I feel there's so many, and you've supported them over your years, the artisanal. Look at Dosa. I mean, that's a brand that still makes my heart skip a beat. And she does it on her own terms in her own way.
Yeah.
You know, the color sense is there. And it's just, it's what I'm saying. I think it's time to celebrate being unique and do it in your way. You don't have to follow what you think is the norm. And I mean, especially now, as you know, John Darien's another shout out.
Oh, yeah.
He's done his things his way. He's still hand making in a glue little office. And, hey, come on, look at his world.
Yeah.
Look at his Christmas shop. Mm. Doesn't that, he makes his store all Christmas, then he makes it all Easter. He's very small team. It just makes me so happy to see he's still here.
What did you wear to prom?
Oh, God. Well, in all honesty, that's an interesting question. I didn't go to my prom. I made my prom.
Tell me about that.
I have a picture that somebody sent me recently because I didn't get the picture box for my mom's. I got some things, but I found a card, oddly enough, in my box. And in that card it was my 40th birthday. There was pictures she had sent me from some of my favorites, aunts, like we were talking about. And in there was one with me and like the minions that were with me that made the prom. Of course, my mom was at the prom. I can tell you what she wore because she was a chaperone. And I was like, my mom was the chaperone at my prom and I don't go to the prom, but I made the prom. So I was an artist, I should have been an art teacher, if you want the truth. I often filled in for mine because he was smoking weed somewhere. And I became very good at art and, you know, painted the school mascot on the gym wall. I was hired to do these things. I was already getting commissions with my briefcase at age, you know, 12 and 13. But the prom was really, it was controversial for me because I didn't, you know, it was very... I wanted the teacher scholarship more, Laura, which I got, you know, that was more important to me.
I love it.
So I wore, it was a corduroy, you know, jacket, and that brown and white herringbone pants. But it was a big, I recently spoke to some of these because they will be attending my mom's memorial since they all knew her. They knew her more than I did, I think.
Aww.
But yeah, so I was working it all through the night. Oh my God. You know, things don't, as you know, when you do events, always stay up.
Well, thank you for this. I've loved talking.
Been a pleasure.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. Please follow us on Instagram at What We Wore Podcast for additional content and show updates. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.